It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do, and don't you ever forget that.
And now, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. We are really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Aquilyn Kennedy.
Hey there.
Executive Producer and Chief Brand Strategist. The second, joining us by phone, is Dr. Doyle Hodges, who is the executive editor for the Texas National Security Review. The third, joining us by phone in the bottom half of the hour, is Mr. Hal Shurick, who is a reporter for Fox 10. And last, but no wise least, is our friend Mr. Charlie Moss, who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. So, Aquilyn, tell me something good.
We have two amazing things happening. First and foremost, we are welcoming our two Democratic gubernatorial candidates here to this station, right here on air, next week, next Thursday at 6 o'clock. We are very, very excited about that. Robert's been working tirelessly on this. I've had him, you know, I've been working him real hard on this one.
You're driving me. You're actually grinding.
You know, as y'all heard last week, he's the talent. So, yes, he is the talent. But another thing I wanted to share with you, and you all know that healthcare is very close to my heart, no pun intended. And we are trying our best to work with our legislators to ensure that all of us can get the health care we need. We all need to be healthy. I've started a petition, and I would love for you to take a look at this petition. And if you're so moved, and I hope you are, please sign the petition to help us convince everyone in this state that we can all take care of each other. We can all get better together. We just need to get the health care that we need, especially for those who can't afford it. So please take a look on Kennedy for Alabama's Facebook page, and you will find the link there. So we'd really appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Aquilyn, for both of those Tell Me Something Goods. And just to reinforce that program note, we'll do it several times throughout the program. So next Thursday night, June the 16th at 6 o'clock p.m., we are going to host a debate for the Democratic candidates who are seeking the Democratic nomination for Alabama governor. They're going to be in studio. We are going to be doing this on the radio, and we're also working to get it on either Facebook Live or YouTube Live or something like that as well. So working really hard to make that happen, so please make a note of that. So now for the headlines. The first headline comes from Politico. It reads, January 6th committee reveals its findings in prime time. The video was published on the 8th of June, 2022. The second headline comes from NBCNews.com. Person fatally shot by police outside of Alabama Elementary School. It was written by Minnie Yvonne Burke from the Associated Press and published today, June the 9th, 2022. The final headline comes from BBC.com. It reads, Ukrainian casualties. Kyiv losing up to 200 troops a day, according to a Zelensky aide. This article was published today on June the 9th, 2022. One of the things that has been interesting since we've been so completely focused on domestic issues is that sometimes we lose perspective on what's actually happening on the international stage. So one of the things I was really excited about an opportunity was to open this conversation up on the news program and talk to somebody who knows a whole heck of a lot more about what's going on from a national security perspective than I do. So with that, it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Doyle Hodges to our show. Dr. Hodges, you on the line?
Bobby, great to speak with you.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good. Well, hey, I know it is great to welcome you back to Kennedy for Alabama. I know it's been a couple of years since we've actually had you on the show. But for those folks who are just listening and getting introduced to you for the first time, just take a moment to talk a little bit about your background and how you ended up working in the national security space.
Sure. So Bobby and I were classmates at the United States Naval Academy, graduating in 1992, and we were also both political science majors. So I went on and did a master's at the University of Maryland right after graduation in government and politics, and from there went and spent about a 21-year career in the Navy, where I served on ships, commanding a salvage ship out of Sasebo, Japan, and a destroyer out of Norfolk, Virginia. And my last job, I was running the seamanship and navigation department at the U.S. Naval Academy, and they had the officers who had command teaching the ethics course to midshipmen, and I found I really loved teaching. I thought that's what I wanted to do after the Navy. So when I retired, I went to Princeton and earned a doctorate in security studies. Taught for a little bit at the Naval War College, and then had the opportunity to come back into the D.C. area, and now I'm the editor of Texas National Security Review, which is a journal focused on national security, not of Texas, in fact, but of the entire world, and is run as a joint partnership between the University of Texas and the policy website War on the Rock.
I'm actually cracking up because when you accepted that role and left the Naval War College, which is up in Newport, Rhode Island, that was the first thing I thought. I thought you had gone to Texas and were actually doing something in Texas. But as you mentioned, the journal that you're working with actually does the entire world. And so that is an absolutely wonderful thing. So, okay, so I'm sitting down here right now in Mobile, Alabama. Our show this season airs on Thursday nights as a live show in Mobile, and then a rebroadcast as the recorded show in Montgomery and in Huntsville on Sunday. So for those folks who are sitting here in Alabama and they're hearing about Ukraine and Russia and NATO, can you just kind of take a moment to explain what the landscape is and really what the heck is happening over there?
Sure. Well, I'll give the very short version, which is, you know, at the end of the Cold War, when the Soviet Union broke up, there had been up to that point two major political blocs, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, led by the United States, and the Warsaw Pact, led by the Soviet Union.
Okay.
When the Soviet Union fell apart, there was a lot of discussion between the leaders of the former Soviet Union and the new Russia as to whether NATO would continue to exist. Because the purpose of NATO, as the one early leader of NATO said, it was to keep the Americans in, the Russians out, and the Germans down.
Okay.
And if you weren't worried about the Soviets anymore and the Germans weren't posing a threat to security, well, what was NATO there for?
Right.
But as it turned out, NATO was desired by an awful lot of European countries. And so there's still dispute in historical circles over whether the United States promised Russia that NATO would not expand any to the east from its borders.
I got you.
And the German border at Poland. Russia, and certainly Vladimir Putin, take the position that the United States broke its word when NATO expansion occurred.
And
added a number of nations, including nations that now border with Russia. The United States asserts that no such guarantees were ever given, and further, that it's up to every country whether or not they want to join NATO, that Russia doesn't get to vote on whether or not another country joins NATO, since Russia's not a member of NATO.
So, you know, it's interesting.
Ukraine is a country that has not joined NATO, and at this point I think it's very unlikely to. But it is a country that's had aspirations to do so.
Okay.
It's also a country that Russia has a close relationship with, culturally, historically, economically. And it's a country where there has been an ongoing low-grade war for almost a decade. After, in 2014... Russian forces seized Crimea, which is a peninsula that comes from Ukraine and goes out into the Black Sea. And they did that just after the Olympics in 2014.
Gotcha. So, hey, so one question for you, Doyle.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, one question for you. So when you talked about the called the original landscape with the United States and the original NATO countries on one side, the Soviet Union and the original Warsaw Pact nations on the other side, Russia didn't exist yet, right? Because it was still the Soviet Union. So when the Soviet Union broke up, did Russia just kind of assume that all that stuff was going to continue forward? Is that the kind of the way people should think about it?
Well, I think it's fair to say that when you say Russia didn't exist yet, that's not quite right.
Okay.
Because although the Soviet Union was the Soviet Union, its flavor was Russia.
Got it.
The language was Russian. The security concerns were Russian. Culturally, they were Russian. while some of the leaders, you know, Stalin famously came from Georgia, but most of the prominent leaders were ethnically Russian.
I got you.
So the Soviet Union was, in a way, an empire built around Russia's security concerns. And that buffer of territory and trading partners actually helped provide a lot of the answers to questions that have bugged Russia historically about their security, because they are a country with a lot of land borders and at times bad neighbors. And so having this buffer around them makes them feel more secure.
Okay. All right. Well, I cut you off right around the time that you were saying that Russia had gone in and annexed Crimea in 2014.
Right. So in 2014, you had this campaign that was run by what were called Little Green Men. And sadly for the 12-year-old in me, we're not talking about Martians. We're talking about Russian soldiers who were wearing green uniforms, but which had no insignia to formally say what nation they were from.
Okay.
Now, you might think, why would you do that? And the answer is that gave Russia just enough deniability to claim that it wasn't them doing it. Everybody knew it was Russia doing it. These people were speaking Russian. They were driving Russian equipment. When you saw photographs of them that were identifiable, they were identifiable with Russian individuals. But there was just nothing said, we're Russia. So these little green men helped to overthrow the government in the Crimea region. And then they held a referendum, which strangely, when it's being occupied by Russian troops, voted that Crimea should be part of Russia.
Right.
Really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been the stage. And then in the area around there, you'll hear of regions like Donetsk and Luhansk. These are areas in eastern Ukraine that are north of Crimea.
Okay.
Border on the Sea of Azov, which if you were to take a look on the map and you think of, you go from the Mediterranean, you go to the right, going through the Turkish Straits, first the Dardanelles, and then the Bosphorus. And then you see the Black Sea, which is this little splotch kind of coming up there. You see the Crimean Peninsula, which kind of dangles down into the Black Sea from the north. And just on the right-hand side, just on the east of the Crimean Peninsula, is a little sea, the Sea of Azov.
Okay.
And that little sea is actually where the Don River comes out, which is a major way of shipping grain and other resources, both from Ukraine and Russia. They get to the Black Sea, from there to the Mediterranean, and there to world ports.
Gotcha.
So it's an economically important region. And it's important also for the access to warm water ports. Because if you take a look, most of Russia's ports are in the far north.
That's right.
And turns out it gets pretty darn cold up there, and so they aren't usable for a considerable portion of the year. But if you have access to ports that are ice-free all year long, your ability to gain access to world trade now isn't dependent on passing through any other country.
Let me pull on that thread just for a second, Doyle. So if we're going back and we're focusing on that 2014 time frame, is there an argument that the annexation of Crimea was driven by that desire to have a warm water port?
I think you can argue that that is certainly a part of it. And in fact, actually, one of the weird things that happened after the Soviet Union broke up was that Russia retained bases in places that were no longer part of Russia.
Got it.
So the Russian Black Sea Fleet, which was the former Soviet Black Sea Fleet, was based at Sevastopol, which is in Ukraine, in Crimea.
Mm-hmm.
So what it really did was sort of consolidated the ground around that.
I got you.
It also helped this vision of Vladimir Putin for a greater Russia.
Gotcha.
And this has been a part of his vision for Russia as it goes on. In part, there's a good argument that one way to explain a lot of his stuff is this search for status, for recognition as a great power.
I got you.
And on the one hand, he's kind of got it, right? They're one of the big five in the United Nations. They're a permanent member of the Security Council, so they can veto things.
Right.
And really importantly, we'll probably get to this later, they've got nuclear weapons. Turns out a lot of people listen to you when you have nuclear weapons. But on the other hand, economically, they have an economy about the size of Italy, and they're heavily dependent on oil and other commodities, the price of which fluctuates back and forth.
Okay.
So their power in the world isn't what it used to be.
Gotcha. So you made me think of one other question I want to ask you before you continue. So you had made a reference to the fact that Russia has nuclear weapons, and as a nuclear power, it kind of gives you a big stick to wield when you're trying to negotiate on the international stage. I actually recall that at the time of the breakup of the Soviet Union, a significant amount of the nuclear arsenal was actually in the Ukraine. Do you have any perspective on their decision to give up their nuclear weapons and how that may actually end up factoring into what we're dealing with now?
Sure. You know, this is a subject that came up a lot, especially right after the Russian invasion. And again, fairly shortly when Russia made some kind of oblique nuclear threats about the idea that they could use nukes and things like that. One of the things that when you pull the string on that a little bit is interesting is that to say that Ukraine had nuclear weapons isn't quite right.
Okay.
There were nuclear weapons that were stored in Ukraine. But nuclear weapons are the kind of thing that if you have them, you don't want to just loan them to friends, even if you're going to store them at a friend's house.
Got it.
So you're going to put a lock on them. In the United States, these are called PALs, permissive action links. So when we had nuclear weapons, for example, that were based in Turkey or other NATO countries, these permissive action links served to prevent someone from those countries launching United States nuclear weapons without United States approval.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, the weapons in Ukraine were Soviet weapons that were now Russian weapons and had safeguards on them that would have theoretically prevented someone other than a Russian from employing.
Okay.
Now, you know, over the course of 20 years, might Ukraine have figured out how to defeat those? Sure. But the likelihood of something bad happening from a security perspective before then, especially the idea that they were hanging on to nuclear weapons that Russia really wanted back, that kind of suggests that they probably made the right call.
So the way that a person should think about this when they're thinking about things like nuclear weapons, it's not like an armament that you would have in your house where you can just go in and pick up somebody else's weapon and then discharge it. It's like you may have the physical missile there, but you don't have the authorizations, the infrastructure, the data, the commands to tell it to activate. Is that fair?
Yeah, to continue the analogy, and it's far from perfect, but it's good enough for this discussion, certainly is, hey, your friend left his weapon with you, but he put a trigger lock on it, and he kept the key.
Gotcha. Perfect. Okay, so we got through about 2014, but can you move us from 2014 to what happened earlier in 2022?
Sure. So you've got this long simmering war going on in eastern Ukraine that Russia claims not to be involved in. Lots of things go on as a source of that. You see the shoot down of the Malaysian airliner by Russian units that were operating in Ukraine, something that Russia still denies and fails to accept credit for, but which has been proven relatively conclusively using, in fact, in part, open source information obtained by the group Bellingcat, which did an amazing job of reconstructing the social media footprint and also investigators who reassembled the airplane. So you got these things going on. But Putin's not satisfied because he's seeing in the Russian government, particularly with the election of Zelensky, a government that is not willing to do the things that Putin wants him to do. He would like to have a very compliant government in this country next to him. And so he decides, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start ratcheting up the military pressure. And you'll recall that this was going on throughout the fall and winter
this
past year, culminating then in, was it March or February? March, right? Yes, in March when, good heavens, I'm losing track. Was it March 24th or February 24th? February 24th, when Russian forces invaded Ukraine.
Okay.
All right, so they come in. Now, over the past decade, Russia has put a lot of money into improving their military.
Yes.
Because, again, go back to the fall of the Soviet Union. One of the things that was terrible was economically, they were in terrible shape. So this once fearsome military kind of deteriorated. Over the past decade, Russia has reorganized. It has built new systems. It's done all these things. It's tested some of them in Syria. It's deployed its forces into these places. And so there were a lot of people who were thinking, wow, you know, we've seen some major exercises and these other sorts of things where Russia has really put into place this newly modernized system. This is going to be a walkover. They're going to come in there, and it just, you know, when you take a look, the math doesn't look good if you're Ukrainian. Russia's a big country with a modern military. Ukraine, just a little bit smaller than Texas. This is going to be over in 3 or 4 days.
Right.
We're just past 100 days. The Russian casualty figures are really, really hard to get an accurate number on, but the best guesses I've seen put them north of 15,000 killed.
Wow.
The impact to Russian military has been substantial. They have had to call up forces from other parts of Russia and bring them in. They have basically committed most of their operationally ready military. And again, remember that like any military, the numbers, if you say Russia has an army of, let's say, a million people, and forgive me, I don't know the exact size, but right. If you say it's a million people, that probably less than half of those are trigger pullers.
Correct.
So in this case, Russia had about 130,000 soldiers massed on the border with Ukraine before they started. You think about the losses that have incurred over the course of the past 100 days, and it has been a substantial blow to the Russian military.
Oh, absolutely.
But it has also been devastating for the people of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it is a bloody, bloody mess.
So, Doyle, we've got about 3 minutes left in the segment before we go to the bottom half of the hour break. So make the transition to me, right? So you've laid out a really good background, but for folks who are sitting here safe and sound in the US of A, for those of us who are here in Alabama, what's the implication? Why is it that we care?
Sure. I got four reasons real quick.
Okay.
Number one, have you bought food or gas lately?
Russia
is the world's third largest oil producer behind the United States and Saudi Arabia, and they are the second largest contributor to the global market. Their gas is being sanctioned. There's not as much of it out there, so there's a reduction in supply. The cost of gas goes up.
Okay.
Ukraine, 10% of the amount of corn that the United States produces out of a country, again, that's just a little bit smaller than Texas.
Wow.
60% of the amount of wheat that the United States produces. None of that is getting to the world market right now.
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, all the other countries that produce corn and wheat, they use petroleum-intensive agriculture. So these methods of farming, of fertilizing, all these other sorts of things are now more expensive because the cost of oil has gone up.
I got you.
So, and any kind of meat that you eat that's fed a grain-based feed, chicken, pork, that's going to be more expensive too.
So that's the price of food.
Protecting your pocketbook.
Yep.
The second thing, Russia's trying to change the rules. Well, why should we care? Well, we care because the rules are rules that the United States set up after World War II, and they've done a pretty good job of maintaining security, stability, and prosperity around the world.
Gotcha.
What Russia's trying to do is to change the rules and say, I can go do this just because I have force and I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, when countries in Europe do that, it works out really bad for everybody else around.
Right.
And that goes to the third reason. Ideas matter. Vladimir Putin is not a democratic ruler. He's a ruler who murders his political opponents. He's a ruler who systematically targets minorities within his country. Again, when countries with those types of regimes prosper in Europe, historically, it's worked out really badly for the rest of them.
Right.
And finally, our adversaries are watching what's going on in Ukraine. If you think about a superpower that is going into an annoying country nearby and fighting a military campaign, well, that's how China would view the Taiwan problem.
Right.
So they're watching and they're learning from what's going on, and we should be too.
Well, Doyle, thank you so much for that quick summary. If folks want to get in touch with you, learn more about the journal, War on the Rocks, etc., how can they best do that?
So I would encourage them to check the War on the Rocks website, which is just warontherocks.com. There have been great podcasts with our editor-in-chief, Ryan Evans, and Michael Kaufman about the Ukraine conflict. They're terrific. I must hear source. The Texas National Security Review website, tnsr.org, is another great resource. All of our content available for free online. And then you can also follow both publications on Twitter, or you can follow me on Twitter at Doyle K. Hodges.
All right, Doyle. Well, thank you so much for calling in tonight and sharing your insights with our audience. And we'll be looking forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, Bobby. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Well, for those of you who are just tuning in, we have had a fantastic segment there with Dr. Doyle Hodges from the Texas National Security Review, learning all about the Ukraine. That's absolutely fascinating, isn't it?
It's absolutely fascinating. And you know, what's great is that there's so much information and so much history that the average person just wouldn't know. And so having that level of detail and, you know, just adding some color to why the motivation behind what people have done has really been hopefully a lesson to us in terms of thinking about what we need to do going forward.
Absolutely. Well, for all of you in the listening audience, we are going to take a break, and then we will be back to talk about the human element side of this story. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just now joining the program, during the first half of the show, we had a very insightful conversation with Dr. Doyle Hodges. He kind of walked us through the history of the Soviet Union and its transition to the Russian Republic, how that related to their feelings about the Ukraine, a little bit about the things that have been happening over, about the last 8 to 10 years with Ukraine, and most importantly, why it is that we here in the state of Alabama should care. So that was an absolutely wonderful conversation. We are so thankful to him for taking time to join us on the first half of the program. So with that, we're actually going to go to the phone line and see if we have our second guest on. Hello, you're on the line with Kennedy for Alabama.
Yeah, hey, Robert, how are you?
I am doing very well. How are you holding up?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you reaching out.
Hey, I appreciate you being willing to accept the invitation. So I know folks are used to seeing you in our local area on the television screen, but for our folks who are out of market in Montgomery and Huntsville, just take a moment to introduce yourself to the audience. Tell us a little bit about your background and how it was you got interested in your current profession.
Well, I'd be happy to, Robert. I'll try to be brief. I am currently worked for WALA, Fox 10 News, and have for the last 14 years.
Okay.
I'm our most senior reporter, our Baldwin County reporter here. As we all know, Baldwin County is the fastest growing county in the state. And I'm blessed to have an opportunity to cover news here for our folks. I've been in South Alabama since 1989, born and raised in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Yep.
Worked for a television station there. Almost by accident got into this business, Robert. It was nothing that I had aspired to do originally or had planned to do. What happened was after working a hot summer decking swimming pools in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the year I graduated high school, making a little money, I came home, needing to find work back home in Corpus Christi. And thanks to some very strong women in my life, one of the main being my high school principal, who kept in touch with me and let me know about a job opening at the local TV station, I was able to get into the business.
Oh, wow.
Bottom, you might say. I took a job as a runner.
Okay.
Had a good driving record, 18 years old. New graduate, ran tapes around town. Those old things, remember those videotapes?
So yes.
Ran those around town and did that for about a year and worked my way into the news department. Really, I've always enjoyed photography. Video cameras were much different back then, as you can imagine. A lot of heavier, bulkier gear. But I learned the ropes from a good friend in the newsroom, spent a lot of time there. And when a job opening came up, I was lucky enough to get it. Worked there another 4 years before moving here, taking a job at Channel 5.
Okay.
I worked for the CBS station here for about 9 years, from 89 to 98, and left when the Giddens family sold the television station, got out of the news business for about 10 years. And at the end of that stretch, I went back to college.
Okay.
Got my degree, started back at 38 years old. I'm a South Alabama Jaguar, graduate from there. With a public relations track, and really enjoyed going to school. I was ready at that point in my life and really took it all in, and Channel 10 offered me a job when I got out in 2008, and I've been there ever since.
All right. Well, thank you so much for walking us through your background. Hey, one thing I want to make sure I'm doing it. Pronounce your last name for me. I want to make sure I'm saying it correctly.
It's Sherrick.
Sherrick, okay.
Sherrick, yeah, Sherrick, Sherrick. I've answered to a lot of people call me Sheridan.
Oh man. Well, hey, thanks a lot for that, and we are so glad that you are here. You know, when I reached out to you here, I guess over the weekend, I had scripted out the first part of the show and was doing a little research online and saw that you had written an article about, I'll refer to it as the human element of the Ukraine crisis, particularly as it related to some local efforts that folks were using to help, you know, our brothers and sisters who are overseas. Could you talk just a little bit about how you guys make a determination of when you go with hard news versus something that's more of a human element story, and how the issue of the Ukraine just kind of popped up on your radar screen?
Well, certainly. And I'll say this, that we as journalists, I can speak on behalf of my fellow journalists at Fox 10, we're always looking for the human element in every story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, certainly when stories happen, sometimes the initial stories are more the nuts and bolts. What happened? Why did it happen? When did it happen?
Sure.
But then it does always loop back to that why question. And how does it affect people? After all, that's why we're in this business. We want to help. We want to inform. We want to empower. Certainly want to be an advocate for our viewers whenever possible.
Absolutely.
So in this case, of course, the war in Ukraine had just happened. The story you're referring to, I did in early March.
Yes.
So as we probably know, the Russia invaded Ukraine late February. It was fresh on everybody's minds. Everybody was watching the television screens, seeing what was going on there, very concerned, as you mentioned, for our brothers and sisters overseas on what was happening. And we began looking for how do we localize this?
Right.
How does this affect people living here? We see it on the TV screens. A lot of times we see things, and as human beings, it's in our nature to want to help when we can. Well, how could people do that? And as we do so often now, I reached out, started searching through social media, saw that there was a group that had some really extensive ties to the region.
Okay.
And we're doing some fundraising efforts, and we're planning a trip very soon to go into the region. When I say the region, I'm speaking specifically of Moldova.
Okay.
Which is on Ukraine's southern border, as you may know.
Yes.
And there was a local church. The pastor, he was then the pastor at First Baptist Church of Robertsdale, Pastor Jeff Copeland. He's since moved on to start his own congregation and is doing very well, I understand. But First Baptist of Robertsdale has been about a 20-year partner with a church in Moldova.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I learned that. I learned a lot in speaking with Pastor Copeland. And we actually sat and sat down in a pew in his church and just talked for about 45 minutes, no camera running, just talked about, you know, what's moving him. Anyway, Holy Trinity Christian Center in Moldova means a great deal to him. Have partners. It's a partner church. He's been going over there for many years doing mission work, work with orphanages there, and his heart was breaking over the images he was seeing. So, of course, he wanted to help. And we didn't talk about everything he was going to be doing. I do know that their number one priority was to help these refugees, these women, these children that were coming to the border, leaving their husbands, their fathers, many times their sons behind, not knowing if they would see them again. So he couldn't wait to get there, and it was a long trip for him. And I don't know which story you saw, but I did do a follow-up after he and family pastor Josh Lilly, also from First Baptist, made the trip. They had to get into Romania.
Yep.
It was a long and arduous trip. Then they had to go across country and by land get into Moldova. So it was not an easy task getting there. But once they did get there, the reception they got was beyond words, really, he said. Just really tears in their eyes. They couldn't believe that these two pastors from their church in South Alabama came all the way over bringing a considerable amount of money because of the generosity of people here in South Alabama.
You know,
and, you know, that area, Robert, I'm sure you're also aware inflation in that region was through the roof. Still is. You know, back in early March, gas was already $8 a gallon. It took $25 a day just to support each refugee. So, anyway, I checked back in with them after they had been there through the weekend. We did a video interview long distance from across seas, talked to him another time, kind of got filled in on how things were going. He was able to let folks back here who had supported the effort know where their money went. And we were able to just see how, you know, that outpouring support was helping the region.
There were a couple of things that really struck me from what it was you just went through and then connecting the dots back to the research that I was doing before I called you. And I just want to drill down on this just a little bit. So you talked about empty store shelves, and you talked about inflation increasing the price of those limited products that were still there. You know, when I think about what's happening here domestically with when we have hurricanes and stuff like that, natural disasters, it always ends up being a problem, but that problem's time bound, right? So think about us after, you know, Hurricane Sally, for example. But there was still a point in time in which the supply chains basically righted themselves, and then there was food on the shelves again. But when we're in a war footing like we are now, getting that food back on the shelves is going to take a whole heck of a lot longer than it would for us after a storm. So I can only imagine how well received they were when they actually showed up in region with resources.
Well, absolutely. And it's important to understand that if not for folks like these two pastors from our local church and hundreds, if not thousands, of others from around the country doing the same thing, who knows how desperate things would have gotten during those times. This is a time, as we know, that the U.S. was not giving any, you know, any or much support to Ukraine directly, certainly no military support directly, because, well, we all know that that was nothing that they could do at the time, given the political state of things. So any support that was coming from the U.S. was going through these kind of routes. Now, and this is all what we're talking about here is humanitarian support, of course.
Absolutely.
But I can say that through my conversations with Pastor, there was more than just humanitarian support. There was a huge need for some of these Ukrainian soldiers on the border to be able to communicate with their fellow soldiers. Mm-hmm. They weren't able to without some of the help they got.
Right.
And I'll just leave it at that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we know that even if you stayed on that humanitarian thread, the fact that they were able to interact with folks and get them those resources that helped them to continue to go forward was absolutely huge. And I just want to extend my personal thanks to you as well and to Fox 10 for covering the story, because we know a lot of these things don't necessarily get covered. So thank you.
Well, absolutely. These are the types of stories that I love to do. There are stories that we have to cover.
Mm-hmm.
There are stories that we want to cover, and then there are the ones that you see on the air. And sometimes those get mixed together. And this is one that had to be told. And certainly there was no question when we started discussing it in our editorial meeting the morning before I did it that it was going to get done.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, hey, how are you for time? We're going to end up going into a break here, and I wanted to get into the other topic that you and I talked about before. Do you have a little bit more time to hang out with us?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So, for those in the listening audience, we have been talking to Fox 10 News reporter Hal Sherrick. And he has been telling us a little bit about the human element that goes into identifying stories, particularly stories with international implications with local tie-ins. So we're going to go to our last break of the evening and come back and transition to our final topic. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market, specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications. Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. As we went to the last break, we were just talking to our friend Hal Shurick, who is a news reporter for Fox 10. And we just spent a little bit of time talking about the human element as it pertained to the conflict in the Ukraine. So we're going to go back to Hal and continue our conversation. Hal, are you still there?
I am.
Thank you so much. So one of the questions that I love to post to our journalist guest is getting away from the headline of the day and just allowing them to talk a little bit about the stories that they've loved. So the question is, when you look back over the course of your career, is there an individual story or categories of stories that have been the most fulfilling for you? And if so, what have those been?
Gosh, I think so. It's not hard, really. Even though I've been doing this a long time, a lot of things stand out. I've flown out on a chopper, landed on the USS Lexington when she was still commissioned,
mm-hmm.
and pulling in to be the backdrop for Homeport Ingleside,
right,
in South Texas. That was quite a hike around that ship with all my gear, I can tell you.
Wow.
You know, just a lot of neat things, but the ones that really get me are the tearjerkers, the reunions.
Okay. Yep.
Yes.
You know, people helping other people. Now, it could be a family that loses everything in a fire, and the
right.
neighbors come together, the local church and Red Cross. I mean, those kind of things. It can be, as we talked before, about after a storm and you know, everything's gone, power's out, neighbors coming together and helping one another. You know, those are always the stories that I love. And to put my finger on one's a hard thing to do,
right.
but I can categorize it for you. And really, looking back, it's the homecomings. It's the homecomings, particularly from war.
Yes. Never gets old.
You know, it's the with the war in Afghanistan. It's the plane loads of soldiers flying back into Hurlburt Field with all their families waiting, the little kids, the babies who've never met their dads or moms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just those stories, the signs and the tears shed. I mean, those are just so joyous. And to be a part of it, you know, be a part of it from the background, but to show everybody else that can't be there what it means.
Right.
So that really kind of gets me, and always has. And something I've told my kids, and I've told young people over the years, and I've had the fortune to speak and interview a number of World War II veterans over the years.
Yes.
And that's a hard thing to do anymore. You know,
right.
I could think back to meeting quite a few, to the honor flights out of Mobile that Dr. Barry Booth put together, and being there when they come back, and they're just so happy to talk about going to the World War II Memorial,
yes,
in Washington, D.C., and it's just a great thing. And then getting to sit down with some of them on special occasions. Maybe I remember one wrote a book, and I got to talk with him. You had Mr. Jack from Fairhope, who he was known as Mr. Jack.
Yes.
It was Major John Jacobson, but you know, just getting to meet these people and talk with them, and I hope that our young people, when they had the opportunity, and if they still do have the opportunity, will open their ears when they get a chance to meet some of these folks.
Absolutely.
And I just feel fortunate that I was able to do that.
It's
unfortunately, more of the World War II veteran stories I cover now are funerals.
Mm.
Just the way of things.
It's, you know, but I will tell you, and I agree, you're speaking to my heart. You're singing my song. This is exactly where I am. But, you know, the thing that I love about what you're saying is these are stories that all actually don't even require words. And that's kind of the most powerful thing. Love, joy. These are things that are, you know, you don't even have to say anything. Communicate that just through the feeling that you know, because everyone, it's a universal thing. And so I mean, that's just so powerful.
It's what makes us human.
It is what makes us human. And it is actually the great uniter. That's really what it is. It's the one thing that we can all kind of come together. And I mean, honestly, I feel every news station and every newscast should have some great uniter piece, because it's always, you know, the news is just fraught with just negative, 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 you know, challenge, challenge, challenge. And it would be wonderful. And you know, you all do that quite a bit. And just having more positive news, hopefully that can kind of just help lift the communities that are watching. So really, really love that you love those and embrace those stories so much.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. We do try. Unfortunately, I wish there was time to do more of it.
I know.
I tell people all the time when I run into them, I say, when something good happens, let me know.
Thank you.
I want to do that. And you know, I just, like I said, I've been so honored. I don't want to let this show get away from me without reading you something I have.
Okay. We got about 2 minutes left.
We talked earlier this week about me coming on and the topics, and we kind of discussed it. I went back and looked at some of my, I save all my scripts.
Okay.
This is one I look back to 2012. This is 20 years, 10 years ago. And I did an interview with Gordon Pierce of Fairhope. Now, he was 89 at the time.
Okay.
He joined the Navy in 1940 as a seaman first class. He served on the USS Yorktown. Of course, those who know their history know that Yorktown sunk in the Battle of Midway.
Right.
Deciding battle in the Pacific. Now, Pierce had a front row seat, and I was going to read you some of the quotes. I was going to read through a short part of the script, just kind of put into perspective what some of these men and women I've talked to that served and a lot of the support roles back then, but what they went through, you know, and why we consider them our greatest generation.
We got about 90 seconds left, about 90 seconds, just so you know.
All right, so let's start here. This is him talking to me. When them last fighter planes took off the Yorktown, I could still see them. It wasn't the four of them, here's recalled. That was a vivid memory of the Battle of Midway, June 4th, 1942. They were set to intercept incoming Japanese bombers and torpedo planes, but those fighter planes never made it back.
Mm.
Although our tactical fleet 17 crippled the Japanese Navy in a short battle, the Yorktown met her fate that day, and Pierce was assigned to a bombing squadron. But as Japanese bombers approached, he manned his battle station. The dive bombers were coming in on us, said Pierce. The anti-aircraft fire, I was wondering at the time, why wasn't our anti-aircraft fire hitting the other ships, too, at that same time? Having already suffered a crippling blow from a bomber, Pierce watched helplessly as two torpedoes smashed through the hull of the ship just below where he was manning two 30 caliber guns.
Wow.
It was highly explosive, Pierce said, of the impact. It crumbled the catwalk where I was standing, and I ended up on the flight deck, half-conscious. Pierce crawled his way back to his battle station, but the ship soon began to list, and the order was given to abandon.
We got about 30 seconds.
The only fear I had was if the ship went down, was I going to get sucked down with it, And that's just a little portion of it, but it gives you an idea of why I so love talking to you.
No, absolutely. And he made it all the way to 90th birthday, and he was still telling the story. That's powerful.
There you go. Well, Hal, thank you so much for joining us tonight, talking about the human element of the Ukraine story and also the stories that you have found most impactful. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for the listening audience, thank you so much for tuning in to Kennedy for Alabama. Make sure that you tune in next week at 6 o'clock for the Democratic gubernatorial debate for the Democratic nomination for governor. Until then, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.